Judy, you were saying?
National president.
Right. The national president, who was Carmela Kalmanson, gave me what is called a special status appointment. And the national president has 7 of them in any given year. They're given for a variety of reasons, but she made me a special status appointment so I could stay at the national level, basically. And subsequently, she gave me a portfolio called Career Women. Hadassah was trying to attract women who worked full time, who were not part of Hadassah at the point, and they were trying to do special interest groups, basically. Mm-hmm. I made the comment to her that, you know, Carmi, this is wonderful, but I'm really not a career woman in terms of the definition that she was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I will always remember, she said, nobody will ever know it. Just do what you do the way you do it, and it'll be fine. So mm-hmm. I had that portfolio for a year. And I subsequently got elected to the national board. Let me see. I think the first time I got elected was 1991. And I was given a number of portfolios, but the portfolio I took next was something called, I have to remember, Target Communities. Target Communities were 10 communities across the country where there was an existing Hadassah chapter.
There was
an existing Hadassah chapter, like Portland, Oregon, Atlanta, Georgia, Staunton, Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Columbus, Ohio, that needed help, needed to be strengthened in mm-hmm. some way. And so they got me and one of the professionals, and we came in, and we came with interest, expertise, and some money, mm-hmm. all of which make things happen. And we were able to help in a number of instances. They set up an office with a paid part-time mm-hmm. Not executive director, but like secretary, who could do a lot of the mailing and do a lot of the things that were keeping chapters from flourishing, etc. So I did that for a few years and traveled around the country. And I traveled with a woman named Shirley Kalb, who's a wonderful woman who at one point in her life had been a Hadassah volunteer, had worked in the national office as a volunteer, had subsequently gone to work as a paid professional because her husband got sick. And she needed to go to work, and so she did. But she didn't work for Hadassah. She worked for American Professors for Peace and a bunch of other things. And subsequently, now she does work for Hadassah as a paid professional.
KALB or CALB?
KALB.
Mm-hmm. And what was her home city?
She's from Westchester. She's from. Westchester County. You know, she's from Westchester. Yeah. And she still works at Hadassah, and I've worked with her in a number of capacities. But Shirley and I traveled around the country and did this kind of work. And then the next job I had in Hadassah, I became, a couple of things happened in 1995. I was elected to the national board for a second time, and I became a national vice president. If you're a national vice president of Hadassah at that time, the vice presidency itself did not carry a portfolio as such. It made you a member of the executive committee, and it made you, one of the leadership. But the portfolio that I had at the time, I became the chairman of American Affairs. And American Affairs dealt with the government and issues here in the United States. And since it was a perfect fit for me, still is, I was a political science major, et cetera, as you already know. And so this was of great interest to me. Also, at the time, Hadassah was attempting to, to continue to attract people to the organization. And one of the ways to do it is to continually be relevant to people's lives. And what makes you relevant to people's lives is to do things that make sense to them And so a lot of the things that we have since done on the within this country has been a great help in attracting people and keeping people in the organization. A few other things. Before I became the American Affairs Chair, I was made the chairman of a committee on governance at National Hadassah. And it was a committee established to study how we ran ourselves, you know, how we operated and how we could change. It was an interesting appointment because I was not a member of the executive committee, but I was called on to help reform it. I was not a member of the leadership, quote unquote, because I wasn't a member of the executive committee. And we made a lot of changes. I could go through all kinds of things. I don't know if you find it relevant, although it's very relevant to Hadassah and how the organization has changed. But let's skip that for the moment, and we'll go on to some other things. The governance committee? I became the governance chairman, I think, in 94.
Okay.
And 93, 94. And I had it for a few years. I became the chairman of the American Affairs Department in 95. And I also got another appointment. I was made the chairman of the Beijing Committee. And what that meant was there was a UN conference held in Beijing on the status of women in September of 1995. And National Hadassah sent a delegation, and I chaired it. And I was the chairman of the Beijing delegation.
Mm-hmm.
That's another whole topic. I don't really know how much... I can give you lots of information about what these things mean, but it depends on how, you know...
The important thing is for you to judge that you want to say it.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you lots of things then. Let's go to Beijing, and then we can go back to governance. The Beijing meeting was a continuation of a series of meetings on the status of women that had started in 1975. The first meeting was held in Mexico City.
I remember that well.
And that is the meeting at which it was promulgated that Zionism is racism.
Yeah.
Hadassah had a member who was there. Her name was Josie Burson, and she was from Tennessee, and I've never met the lady, but she is still alive. And she was there, but nothing, you know, very much happened, and et cetera. Subsequently, the meetings were held, boy, it's been a while since I thought of these, went from Mexico City to Sheraton. Africa, we're in Africa. Kenya. It was in Kenya. And then it went to Denmark. And then it went to Beijing. I think that's the order.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, Beijing was in 95. And you have to put yourself back and remember what it was like in 1995. One of the reasons why Hadassah was going... we are an international organization. We're an international medical organization. We do work in many, many countries. That would be a reason to go to a conference on the status of women. But because Israel had been treated so badly at previous conferences, those of us involved created a network of representatives of a lot of different Jewish organizations in the United States. And we met over the course of a year. I actually became the chairman of this in 1994. The conference itself didn't happen until 1995. But in that year before, we met a lot in New York to strategize on how we would go to the conference, how we would work at the conference, how we would try to protect Israel.
Mm-hmm.
We worked with the Israeli delegation as well. We had sessions. I'm trying to think of what the right phrase is. Basically, was how to physically protect ourselves, because at one of the conferences they'd been attacked. It was a whole lot of group dynamics things, and we went with the idea that we would, you know. Well, obviously, we were intelligent people. We didn't know what to expect, and we were going to try to, handle whatever happened. Well, as it happens, the Beijing conference turned out to be an absolutely wonderful affair so far as Israel was concerned. Keep in mind, this was held in September of 95, so the peace process was all over the place, breaking out all over the place. Everybody was feeling very good about Israel. Europe was feeling good about Israel, and even some of the Arab countries were feeling good about Israel. The whole thing was happening. So basically what ended up happening at Beijing is that the problem never happened. Mm-hmm. And the way I talked about it for years in speeches is that when the head of the Israeli delegation took the podium, as the head of every delegation got an opportunity to speak, she was greeted with applause. She spoke beautifully. She finished. I'm trying to think of her name at the moment, but I'll come up with it. Yeah. She spoke beautifully. When she was finished, everybody applauded, and nobody walked out. Mm-hmm. There was no boycott of her speaking. In some respects, it was almost a non-event in terms of what we were afraid might have happened, okay? But keep in mind, Hillary Clinton was the honorary chairman of the American delegation, and so this was a really big deal. Marlene Post, who was the president of Hadassah at the time, and myself were the official Hadassah delegates, which meant we got to go sit in meetings like that. The other people who went with us, and we had six other people with us, we were the largest American Jewish delegation there. We had six other women with us. They went to the meetings that were held out in a place called Wairu, which is what, if you have any memory of, and there's no reason for either of you to have any memory of it, but when the conference occurred, Wairu was an hour out of Beijing, and it was an entirely different venue, and it was set up to keep all these women from all over the world from destroying this conference, you know, which was basically the conference. Most conference delegations were headed by men, and all the UN countries were represented, and it was a big international meeting, and then they had these 40,000 women who showed up to this conference as NGOs, as non-governmental organization representatives, and they separated them by an hour, basically. But it was a wonderful convention, a wonderful meeting, and as I said, Israel came out very well in it. Now, we had divided, the book was this thick of the sessions out in Wairu, and we had this thick, and we had gone through and tried to figure out spreading ourselves as thin as possible. And there were many things going on in any given hour. Okay, we looked at it, and we tried, anytime the word Arab appeared or something like that, we tried to make sure that somebody got there to see what was going on. Well, it became very evident very quickly that the Israel thing was a non-event. There were several meetings
non-event. Negative form.
There were no positive. Negative. Very positive in the fact that nothing happened. Nothing went wrong. Israel, as I said, Israel was treated like Ben-Gurion wanted Israel to be treated, as a nation among nations. Yeah. And they were not the pariah of this conference, as they had been in the past. I give as an example, I went to one that said it had to do with Lebanon. I forget what the exact title was. It was on the very first day that we were out at Wairu, and I chose to go to that. It had something about Palestinian women or something. I don't even know what the title was, but it looked like something we should go to. I went, and I was utterly flabbergasted, because what the session turned out to be was about the presence of AIDS in Arab countries. Had nothing to do with Israel. Had nothing to do with the Jews. It had nothing to do with the conflict. They had videotapes of women who were married, Arab women, Lebanese women, who had AIDS, whose children now had AIDS, who had been infected by their husbands, and that was the cause celebre. So what I'm saying is, in our minds, we thought, you know, Israel could be part of all this, and it turned out Israel really wasn't. Now, there were sessions held with Palestinian women and Israeli women where they discussed things, but they were done, you know, they didn't necessarily agree, but there's nothing the matter with that. Yeah. That's, you know, an international conference, you have differences, but there was no stigmatizing, and there was no mass demonstrations against Israel, et cetera. So in that respect, that was a very interesting part of the conference. Mm-hmm. And besides which, it was just incredible to be at a conference with 40,000 people. And as I've said, I was always knew I was a minority being Jewish, okay? Mm-hmm. But I had never been someplace where, one, being white was a minority, being an American was a minority, being a North American was a minority, let alone being Jewish, being a minority. You know, so that, but that's the way the conference was set up. So it was just, it was a fascinating, fascinating experience. And I'll always be very grateful that. Now, this June, I'm going to be at the UN in New York. There's a conference called Beijing Plus Five, where they are evaluating where we've come from, et cetera. Hillary Clinton made a marvelous, Hillary Clinton and Donna Shalala, et cetera, they did a marvelous job there. You may recall that's when Hillary Clinton said, human rights are women's rights are human rights, and all kinds of things, you know, started. So anyway, I was the Beijing chairman with National Hadassah, and it was a very good thing for Hadassah to do, to go to Beijing. And I was very pleased to be the chairman of the delegation. Mm-hmm. The Hadassah convention that took place in August of 95, where I officially became a vice president on a personal level, Harry went, Harry decided we should all go. So Harry went, my mother went, my father-in-law went, my
where?
Sister to Jerusalem. For the convention. Harry went, my mother went, my father-in-law went, my sister-in-law went, my daughter went. David did not go because he had just started working at the JCC and we felt he shouldn't leave 2 weeks after he started. But otherwise, the basic core of my family went. Mm. Unfortunately, my father-in-law had his first stroke there. But otherwise, and ended up at Hadassah Hospital, etc. Mm. But otherwise, it was a fascinating time. And then I became vice president in August. I went to Beijing in September, and I became the chairman of the American Affairs Department. That was my job for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. And as such, we, I think, changed the face of Hadassah in the American Affairs Department. American Affairs before that had been understaffed and underfinanced and under everything, and kind of the stepchild of the whole arrangement, although not with anybody's trying to, it just hadn't ever blossomed. And I just arrived on the scene at a good time with a president who thought it ought to be make a difference. And I was blessed that we hired as a professional a woman named Amy Rutkin. And she stayed for my 4 years. She left a year ago.
Amy Rutkin?
Yeah, R-U-T-K-I-N. She left because she became the chief of staff to Jerry Nadler, Congressman Jerry Nadler, and to, is that right now. And Jerry Nadler, you may or may not know, is the congressman from the west side of New York, and probably the second brightest and second most liberal congressman in the country, second only to Barney Frank. And it's a wonderful, he's a wonderful congressman. But anyway, Amy Rutkin and I, and I say that we did it together because we really did do it together, we changed the entire direction of what the American Affairs Department was doing. And one of the major projects we started in, and we still work on to this day, and which Hadassah has really made a tremendous difference, we became involved in the whole idea and the problems surrounding genetic testing. And we did it because Hadassah Hospital in Jerusalem is very much involved in research, and they were doing genetic research in coordination with the NIH here in the United States.
Yeah.
And Hadassah Hospital was where they identified what is called the BRCA1 and the BRCA2 genes. And they are what are called the breast cancer genes. They're two breast cancer anomaly anomalies. And that whole idea that there were genes for certain things and was coming to a head. And so we got involved because the headlines started saying, we're all about Jewish women having breast cancer, Jewish women this, Jewish women that. Well, Jewish women don't get breast cancer any more than anybody else gets breast cancer, but the headlines don't lead you to believe that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got involved in the whole genetic testing business. And why we got involved was we want, and still want, it's still a live problem, we want people to access genetic testing if they so choose, you know, with the guidance of their physicians and their rabbis or their priests or whatever, to access medical information so they can make the best medical decisions possible for themselves. What we do not want to have happen is that the act of accessing it, the act of getting a genetic test, we do not want that to be used to discriminate against either their employment or their health insurance. And so we have been trying to pass, we've been instrumental in helping to try to pass a bill in Congress that would in fact outlaw the use of genetic information in employment or in health insurance. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no reason for you to have been aware of this, but in this year's State of the Union address, on page 16 of an 18-page speech, President Clinton called for the passage of legislation that would prevent the use of genetic information against somebody in employment or health insurance. And 2 weeks later, he passed, he issued an executive order making it illegal to do that for anybody who works for the federal government. So what we wanted to have happen, if you're now a federal employee, you are protected. But if you live in the state of Pennsylvania, you're not. In fact, there are hearings on May 8th here in the Pennsylvania legislature. But anyway, that became our cause célèbre. We still worked on domestic violence. We still worked on all kinds of things. Like right now, we're very much involved in hate crimes legislation and things like that. But the genetic testing became our major thrust. And we accomplished some extraordinary things. We convened a conference, it was 2 years ago this April, 2 years ago this month, in Washington, in conjunction with the NIH and in conjunction with the Jewish Council on Public Affairs and us. We were the ones that did it. And we convened a conference, and we invited leadership from a variety of national Jewish organizations and the NIH. And the extremely significant part, we had representatives from the Orthodox Union, the Conservative Movement, the Reform Movement, and the Reconstructionist Movement. They sent their leaders. What?
When was this?
April 97. April 90, what are we now? April 98. We met in Washington, D.C., and we had official representatives from each of the movements. First time they'd ever all been in the same room together. And we, in fact, seated them at the same end of the table. That was my own little thing.
These are all women? Or?
No. These are men. These are rabbis. There are no women.
Okay.
Yes, and the representatives from the organizations were men or women, depending on, you know, National Council of Jewish Women sent a woman, B'nai B'rith sent a man, you know, I mean. And we had, the whole purpose of the meeting was to discuss the stigmatization of groups based on genetic testing, to try to see what we could do to avoid the kinds of headlines, et cetera. What we could do to, how we could get people to speak, the people who speak for these organizations and the people who speak for NIH and the people who speak, you know, et cetera, to talk not in terms of Jewish women get more breast cancer, but, you know, the kinds of things. And there are stigmatizations of various populations. The reason why the headlines often have the word Jew in them is because, in fact, the basis for most genetic research in this country is the 1 million blood samples collected since the early 70s for Tay-Sachs. Mm-hmm. A stored blood sample is a stored blood sample, mm-hmm. and it can be used for any testing. Mm-hmm. And all the people who gave permission for their blood to be used for medical research had no idea that, you know, 20 years later, 25 years later, that this would be it. Or, for instance, it's one thing to test for Tay-Sachs, it's one thing to test for breast cancer, but what about schizophrenia? All of which is, you know, these things. And so the whole idea of stigmatization of populations, and we are what's considered a unique research population. Mm-hmm. So, the Jews, that is, yeah. You know.
Yes.
So that's been fascinating to me. And from the way you've been listening, obviously of interest to you. I mean, it's a whole thing that you wouldn't think of as Hadassah or what we do, but it's what we do. It's what I've been doing for 4 years, and I still do it. And I testified before, on behalf of Hadassah, before a Senate committee in 1998, and I have worked with Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, who comes from upstate New York.
Louise who?
Slaughter, S-L-A-U-G-H-T-E-R. And we had been trying to pass what was called the Slaughter Bill, which was a bill which would accomplish what we wanted. The likelihood of this bill or any bill like it being passed in a Republican Congress is absolutely nil. But that doesn't mean it won't get passed at some time. Kennedy-Kassenbaum, which is a bill that was passed a few years ago on the portability of health insurance, was a great step forward. Which meant if you had health insurance, you could buy health insurance when you changed jobs.
Did it not have anything to do with that?
Nothing. But the problem is that you can get health insurance, but nobody tells you how much you have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And you also have to have had health insurance in order to get health insurance. So there's a lot of parts to this. But I've been working for years now on getting a bill passed. And as I say, we truly believe the sentence in the president's State of the Union address was put in there by us. I mean, this whole business. Mm-hmm. We have lobbied for it. We have done all kinds of things for this. Last summer, we took 1,972 women who were part of the Hadassah Convention in Washington, D.C., to the Hill to lobby on four issues, one of which was this genetic testing. Mm-hmm. It's had quite an impact. We still haven't passed the bill, but we're going to get the bill passed. And but, I mean, I adore Hadassah. I believe Hadassah is...
Okay. Hadassah's basic strength or ideology proceeds mm-hmm. from a need to support Israel and the Hadassah structure, the hospital structure and medical structure there has been their major project.
Right.
Now, times have changed in many respects. Why will Hadassah keep going? Now, I know perfectly well that all organizations, fraternal, all sorts, have been in trouble. I'm looking for an ideological thought for energizing or continuing. What's the status and prospect? Now, it may be too late in the tape to get that. We may have to start that next time. But I really want you to talk about status today. And what do you think?
I'm an expert on it, so I'll be glad to tell you.
Why do you suppose to ask?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's a... Do you still have time on this?
Gone.
Well, we can wait till next time.
Go ahead.
What?
You can talk a little.
Well, it is true. Every Jewish organization, every organization in the country, and the Jews in this respect are just like everybody else, only more so, have trouble maintaining their memberships.
Yeah.
The basic reason for having trouble to maintain a membership is that it is no longer fashionable to belong to an umbrella organization. Like Hadassah.
Mm-hmm.
You belong to Save the Whales, you belong to the Anti-Domestic Violence Coalition, you belong to the reading, the coalition that's promoting reading, you know, in for everybody. Single issue things tend to attract people. People can give a limited amount of time on a limited issue, have an impact, feel they made a difference. They don't have to join anything particularly. There's not a lot of fundraising involved with a lot of that stuff. Having said all that, Hadassah is still the largest Jewish women's volunteer organization in the country, which means we are the largest volunteer organization in the country, we are the largest women's organization in the country, and we are the largest Jewish organization in the country. People don't understand that, okay? But we are. We're bigger than anybody you can name, including any women's organization you've ever heard of, including the National Organization of Women, we are bigger. Okay. Having said that, we have to fight like hell every day of the year to maintain it. And the reason why we are bigger is because in the early 1950s, one of the reasons we are bigger, in the early 1950s, somebody, I don't know who she was, but she should be canonized. I realize that's not part of our thing, but she should, if there was such a thing as a Jewish canonization, and that is whoever figured out life membership for Hadassah. Mm-hmm. Can I, let me just, I'll let it go, whatever it is. They can. Oh, except it might be by reservation for this.
Stop.